The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
The biggest funeral since that of Nelson Mandela is taking place this morning in Westminster Abbey. The 10 days of mourning are coming to an end, and Queen Elizabeth II will be buried in Windsor by tonight. We'll hear from Henry McKean in a few minutes' time, but we're joined first of all by Enda Brady, journalist and media consultant, is in London. Enda, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Good to speak to you again.
The first thing I think about in this funeral, besides the collective sadness that many in the United Kingdom feel, is the logistics. A logistical challenge and perhaps a logistical nightmare.
Yeah, it is. But let's be honest here. This has been planned since the 1960s and reviewed every year since. So this has been carefully choreographed. I mean, some of the people who were involved in the early planning of Queen Elizabeth II's funeral have actually passed away decades ago. That'll just give you an indication of her longevity. So this has been rehearsed year after year, decade after decade, and it's finally now coming to fruition, all that planning, as we've seen over the course of the last 10, 11 days. I mean, it's a huge operation, logistical nightmare for many, but I think, you know, if you look at the way it has gone so far, I think it has been a success, if you could use that word about funeral plans. And today they will just be hoping for nothing out of the ordinary. Mm.
The security headaches are there. They've dealt with them before. Certain leaders, world leaders, are afforded the luxury of arriving in their own transport. Joe Biden just arriving now. But others are probably taking the bus for the first time in decades.
Yes, I mean, it's an extraordinary sight, and I would imagine there would have been some high-level diplomatic discussions in the last few days when it became apparent to certain world leaders that they would be required to be in a certain venue at a certain time, and then they would effectively be put on a, you know, a big glorified school bus and bussed into Westminster Abbey. But Joe Biden got a pass for whatever reason. He has his own transport, his own vehicle. Obviously, there's a very well-constructed new American embassy in London with all the vehicles in place and everything that the American president would need for anything should he be in Europe. And the Americans, you're right, have been given a free pass effectively to use their own transport. So I think the biggest problem today, I think two really, anything that wasn't planned for that comes out with the crowd, anything on a surprise level that just could happen on the day. And then secondly, diplomatic relations behind the scenes, all these world leaders mingling together. As you say, for the first time since Mandela's funeral, we'll see so many world leaders in one place. And it's the biggest occasion, I think, really, for the UK, the first state funeral since Winston Churchill's, and that was 1965.
Is there a sense of the Elizabethan era coming to an end and some as yet unpredictable new era emerging?
Yeah, very much so, because not that the British public have grasped it yet. I think it's too fresh in the mind. I think people were so attached to Queen Elizabeth II. Everywhere you look, I mean, from the money they spend here to the stamps they buy and post, her post boxes, I mean, absolutely every corner of British life was dominated by one woman for so long, 70 years. So I think there's a big collective public outpouring of grief over the last couple of weeks, and that will come to a culmination today in Windsor Castle later on. And I think tomorrow the UK will wake up and just kind of, I think, be in a state of shock that it's all gone, that it's happened, it's over, and they have to move on. And I know politically behind the scenes, there's a flurry of announcements coming between tomorrow and Friday from Liz Truss. Her team seem to be extremely eager to get moving. And while they won't say it publicly, there is a feeling that they've been hamstrung by all of this.
So changes at a political level. Also, we're reading that there will be changes at a royal level, whereby Prince Charles is attempting to make sure that in his absence, should he be ill, that non-working royals will not be called upon to take his place.
Yes. So this specifically relates to his brother Andrew. I think today, in all honesty, is probably the last time that people will see him having any role in public. And the whole row about councillors of state, so should the monarch be ill or not able to fulfil his or her duties, I mean, this goes back to the Regency Act of 1937. So Charles can't change it overnight, but it's obvious that he wants to. And I think what's really interesting, the last 6 to 8 months, every now and then a story pops up from certain well-connected royal journalists quoting friends of Andrew, and it's always really optimistically written, saying Andrew feels he can do this, or he can contribute that, or he can make his way back and make amends. And within 24 hours, the story is always shut down by someone quoting sources close to Charles. So the one person, I think Charles has waited his whole life to do this job. He's, what is he, 73 now? I mean, it's a very strange business where you spend your whole life waiting for your mother to die. That's effectively the role of the Prince of Wales. Charles doesn't want this role, that his destiny basically, to be overshadowed by the problems that his brother has created for himself.
Well, Enda, it is an extraordinary spectacle, and it will continue for much of the day until the private committal service in Windsor Castle later on today. There is a benefit, one suspects, in all of this. It does reinforce the place of the monarchy, the very extent of the spectacle.
I think it does, but listen, there's a big debate here about republicanism from a UK perspective. I mean, you'll know on social media, a lot of people have been expressing their deep concern about how much all of this is costing at a time of a cost of living crisis. And is it right that one family should have so much wealth and land and money at a time when many, many people are struggling? I mean, just one statistic to leave you with, Pat. Modern Britain right now has 2,200 food banks. Now, I've been to several food banks in different parts of the United Kingdom for work purposes, to speak to people, to film, and a food bank is somewhere you go if you can't afford food. And the people I've met in food banks have been working people who have jobs, who go out every day, and they simply can't afford to feed their families. And I think for many people, when they see everything that's gone on for the last 10 to 12 days and what it has all cost, there is a big debate to be had here about the future of the monarchy. And Charles even had some words from a member of the public in Cardiff last week who pointed this out to him about how much all of this is costing. So it's not an easy ride for the House of Windsor. He has a huge challenge ahead. And obviously today is a day for people paying their respects and the burial and what have you. But I think the next couple of years for the United Kingdom are going to be extremely challenging.
Enda Brady, journalist and media consultant. Once again, Enda, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. Edwina Curry, former Conservative MP, writer and broadcaster, joins us now, listening to that conversation. Edwina, good morning.
Good morning, good morning. Could I just correct a slight misconception?
Sure.
There? Most of where the royal family live, most of the palaces and stuff like that doesn't belong to them at all. It belongs to the state. It's belonged to the state for a very long time. It belongs to what's called the Crown Estate, but it isn't their personal property. It's there to be used for all sorts of events and ceremonials and all that kind of thing. And I think we would reckon that whatever anything like this is costing, the benefits in terms of tourism, obviously, but also in terms of benefit to the national psyche, makes it absolutely, absolutely worth it. And a great deal of what's happening there, the armed forces are going to get paid anyway. Thank goodness that they're not actually fighting in Ukraine like the Ukrainians are. A lot of the extra costs that are being attributed to this actually are not real extra costs. And it's every so often, I mean, you do this as well. Every so often you have to have a collective act of coming together of commemoration and of thanks. I don't think anyone would want it to be anything less than it is.
Now, your own personal reflections on the passing of the Queen, the only Queen that people in these islands have ever heard of, really. So the passage from Elizabeth to Charles, do you think it'll be an easy one?
No, of course it won't. It won't for all sorts of reasons, most importantly because the Queen has been around for over 70 years. I mean, I remember her father, I remember the coronation just about. I was only a wee child at the time. But the standard that she has set, the way she has conducted herself during that time has been phenomenal and exemplary. One of the nicest programmes that I've listened to in the last week was on BBC Radio 5 last Saturday night, and it was called The Day I Met the Queen. And it was lots of people from all over the world saying the day they met the Queen. Now, I've met the Queen 3 times, and I thought that made me a little bit special, but it clearly didn't. And it turns out that about a third of the British public have actually met or seen the Queen. And that's because she was around for so long, was so hardworking, made a point of ensuring that everyone she spoke to felt that they were special, not just for that moment, but from there onwards. And the King, you called him Prince Charles in your introduction, the King has got a very, very hard act to follow. And by all accounts, he's a much more, emotional man, much more serious. She had a wonderful sense of humour, and I think that's one of the things that has emerged in the descriptions of her recently, the jokes and the fun.
Absolutely. It was entertaining and informative to hear people tell stories that they could not have told, you know, intimate stories they could not have told about the Queen in her life, but can after her passing, can reveal more about her. They would have felt inhibited about speaking so openly about her. And it does seem like she had a wicked sense of humour.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. My favourite story is the one that was told by, I think his name is Richard Griffin, or Griffiths, and he was one of her bodyguards for many years, and she called him Dickie. And they were up near Balmoral walking, a little old lady in headscarf and, you know, tall bodyguard, grey-haired next to her, when they encountered some American hikers who said, excuse me, do you happen to know where Balmoral is? I'm out walking the dogs, as you can hear. Do you happen to know where Balmoral is? And the Queen pointed and said, I think it's over there. And they said, oh, have you ever met the Queen? And the Queen very wickedly said, no, I haven't. But he, pointing at the bodyguard, he has. And so they immediately started taking photographs. They gave the Queen their phone to take a photograph of them with the bodyguard. And then he kindly suggested that she might be in the photo. And then they said to him, what's she really like? And he said, oh, she can be a bit cantankerous, but she does have a wonderful sense of humour. More photos taken, off they went, thank you. And the Queen said, I do wish I would be a flea on the wall listening to what happens when they show their friends those photos. Love it.
No,
and that's typical of her, absolutely typical. She had this fantastic, and she had more than that. She had a very strong sense of social duty. I was chair of social services in Birmingham many years ago, responsible for care of people with disabilities and so on. And we wanted to build a hostel for people released from hospital with what we would now call learning disabilities. And we wanted to build it right next to a school and a shopping centre, and a lot of objections from the locals. And I kept saying, they're not got anything catching. And then I said to the local councillors, I tell you what, if we got the Queen to open it, you'd come, wouldn't you? So we wrote to the palace, we explained the problem. The Queen said yes, she came, and all those local councillors claimed it was all their idea. That's what the Queen was like.
Finally, Edwina, we shall not see her like again. I'm talking about future generations, because Prince Charles, being in his 70s, were he to live as long as his mother, it would mean that Prince William would be in his 60s before he took over. Him taking over would mean that Prince George would be in his 40s at the earliest, at the beginning of the reign, and at the end of the reign of King William. He himself, George, would be in his 60s. So into the foreseeable future, you will not see a platinum jubilee.
We won't see a platinum jubilee again. I'm sure that is true. But you're making all sorts of assumptions. The Queen didn't think she was going to be the Queen until she was in middle age. And her father died in his 50s of lung cancer. It's in the lap of the gods what exactly is going to happen. And the royals will be very conscious that we shouldn't just have a geriatric approach to all of this, and that it's important for the young royals to put their stamp on everything. We're seeing William and Catherine coming to the fore. I think that's wonderful. But bear in mind as well, we're We're an old country. We have millions and millions. I think we have something like three times as many old people as, well, anyway, lots and lots and lots of older people. And we would like to be represented as well by our head of state. And that's actually what's happening. Now, my dogs are busy having...
I'll let you go to finish your walk. You probably want to be back in time for the service beginning on television. Edwina Curry, thank you very much for joining us. Now, I mentioned that Henry McKean is in London for us. He met with some Irish people who flew over for the funeral. And he also met the last people in the queue before it finally closed.
Hi, my name is Ross Fennell. I flew all the way from Tala to pay my respects to the Queen. I felt like I had to as soon as I heard the news. It was heartbreaking. It was a shock to the nation, but also to the world.
You have a big crucifix around your neck.
I do.
How come?
Bless the Queen and, you know, feel the spirit, you know.
And are you feeling that spirit?
Yes, I definitely am. There's a real good spirit here. And everyone's sort of helping each other, you know, and sort of coasting each other along when people are feeling that they're weaker parts.
And people are really trying. There's a lady there eating Smarties, anything
yes,
to get through.
Yes, one of the ladies that we were with, she felt a bit faint about an hour ago. And everyone sort of, you know, helped in and had a little mingle what food they didn't add.
My name's Tim Lowe.
Tim, you're nearly there. You look remarkably refreshed. You're covered in medals. Tell us about your service.
Served in the Royal Navy, served Her Majesty for 39 years. Retired about 3 years ago now. Currently living down in Devon, and yesterday afternoon I felt I had to come up and pay my respects.
You just had to come?
Had to come.
And why does the Queen mean so much to you? I know people back in Ireland can't understand why some queue for 20 hours.
She's the epitome of service, of dedication, of commitment and respect. And I swore an allegiance to her when I joined the Navy in 1981. She has always been there. I'm an Elizabethan, but the Queen is very special. I don't think she's just the United Kingdom's Queen. I think she represents something for everybody on this planet.
And do you need a shower? Do you need a coffee?
I've had a good coffee and I'm looking forward to a hot bath later on this evening.
A hot bath?
Hi, so I've been queuing roughly for about 12 hours now. I'm actually quite excited, but also a bit numb inside from staying out in the cold for so long.
The Queen's done like a lot for us and it doesn't like make it any different if we like stand in a line like 17 hours just to like say God bless you.
I think the main reason why I'm here, my auntie Isabel, when she was alive, she came down for the coronation from Bradford on a very slow train, and her and other family members who this would have been very, very significant to, I just feel it kind of connects their memories and their wishes, and if they were my age and in living in London, they would have been here.
She's a special lady, wasn't
yeah,
she?
Very special, yeah.
She's unique. And you're young, how old are you?
14.
And why did you make the effort?
Parents wanted to come down.
Came all the way in from Leeds.
Leeds.
For you it was important to be here, you dragged the kids down.
It
Not
was
dragged.
Really important, yeah.
We got in line because we absolutely love the Queen and we have the utmost respect for her integrity and we just love her.
What was the feeling like walking past her coffin?
It was actually really, really calming. And we were fortunate enough to see changing of the guards. And I just felt like a power because she was in the coffin. And it's just hard to believe she's gone, but we will miss her.
To go in was such a somber experience. And everyone was so quiet. And there were so many people in there, which is unusual, I think, with that many people. It was very almost spiritual.
So it felt spiritual.
Yeah.
Did you feel almost closer to God almost?
Yeah, a little bit. And especially with the solemnity of the occasion and all the guards changing and everyone just standing there quietly and bowing. It felt almost religious.
Mitchell Brown, you are a veteran. You served in Afghanistan and Iraq, and you do have medals to prove it.
Giving an oath of allegiance to the Queen at 16 is not a small thing. And I think it's something that we'll... It stays with you, so just showing that little bit of respect right at the end, just to my boss as it was.
So she was the boss, and I know where I'm from in Ireland, not everyone, I suppose, was a supporter of the Queen because she was the boss of the military, but she was a figurehead, she was a mascot. You could say she was like a football team losing their mascot, but she was so much more than that, wasn't she?
The last 10 days have shown how much she actually did mean to people.
very upsetting, but wonderful. Wonderful at the same time.
Wonderful, but upsetting. Did you feel close to the Queen?
Oh, I did. Yes, she's been magic, hasn't she?
So you came all the way from the Midlands?
Mm-hmm, just to see the Queen.
And it was worth it?
Oh, every minute, every minute.
And what was it like just going past on your mobility scooter, past the Queen?
A bit embarrassing, to be honest.
Why?
Well, the things she's done all her life, and she's never needed one of these.
Well, she used club cars instead. She used to like using golf caddies.
She's entitled to them, isn't she?
I think it's significant to do something, you know, in the flesh, to do something real rather than do something that you're just participating passively on television. We talked about going to Santiago, maybe we'll do that next time, but I think it's really important to do something, especially with children.
Long day, long queuing.
So the Queen to me is just a symbol of Great Britain and all that is good about England and the palace, and great for the children to be here today, and because they're born in the UK, so to lay their respects.
You're a Wexford lady, you've got flowers, you're heading up to Hyde Park to lay the flowers. For you, how would you describe the Queen to people back home?
I think she's a wonderful woman. She was a great queen.
Wellington Arch is behind us, the Queen. Will come through here.
Yes.
For you, what sort of lady was she?
Very diplomatic, very kind. I think she tried to do her best for everybody.
I had a cry when I heard the news that the Queen had died, but since then I've been reflecting, and if anything, I'm just admiring her life of duty and honouring that. So it's more of a remembrance and respect rather than tearful grief that I'm experiencing. It was lovely to see, particularly all the messages from the children and some lovely, lovely drawings.
We had a picnic by the bandstand and we listened to the Salvation Army playing. It was quite poignant and it's so overwhelming to see so much love and so much respect for the Queen.
What do you think the Queen would think of this outpouring of grief and love?
I think she would be absolutely gobsmacked at how much love there is for her and how many people have come into the city to pay their respects and remember her.
So we were driving back from swimming and we were listening to the news when we heard that the Queen had died, and I felt really upset and I started to cry. I'm very sad that she died. I wish she would stay alive.
Did you shed a tear for the Queen?
Yes.
Was she like your grandmother that you never had?
She was like a grandmother, but not one I've never had. But yeah, you know, she's never going to replace her.
Like a real one? Would she replace your granny?
No. No one can replace your granny, but she was there as influential.
We're on the Mall here. You've a prime spot. Tell me, you've got all your camping gear and you have lots of Coke Zero to keep you awake. Why do you want a prime spot? Why do you want to see the Queen go past?
We have come here to be part of history. I think it's important for the children to be able to remember where they were at this time, and we've got the opportunity today to get prime position to enable that to happen. I think the Queen has been something that's never changed, so it's been a constant in a world of things that are constantly changing. So we're going to go from a generation of people that have only known the Queen to now I have children that will probably know four monarchs.
Gillian, you've got the Northern Irish flag, you've a tent, you've camped out. What does the Queen mean to you?
I'm sad that she's not going to be here anymore, but I think the way that she died is incredible. I think she worked up to 2 days beforehand. She died in a quiet, peaceful way, and she died at her time.
So children have left flowers down here near Buckingham Palace because they've actually closed Buckingham Palace, and one child has written, "Rest in peace and thank you, Mom, for everything. With love, Frankie, Jack, Sarah and family," by Jack. I'm chatting to Dinah Anker from Canada. We're here outside Westminster Abbey. How come you come out?
Well, I'm Canadian, and she's the head of our state and a lovely woman altogether, but I'm here with some girlfriends for what was supposed to be a girls' weekend, and we got to see some of what London had to offer, but we also wanted to be here amongst the people.
When it comes to Canada, when it comes to the Indigenous people, it's
First
hard.
Well, being First Nations, it is kind of it's a really push-pull kind of feeling for the monarchy in general and the role that the Queen and the state play played with what happened to my people in Canada, the Indigenous people. I'm First Nations. I'm Ojibwe from Ontario and Dene from Saskatchewan.
Oh, she meant everything to me, the Queen. All my life I was brought up to respect her, the things she's done for the country. And now we've got a new king. I met Prince Charles many years ago. Now he's the king. I support him. But the Queen meant everything.
And that report from Henry McKean, and Henry will be reporting from London throughout the day.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.